What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, this is Pia Barancini, and welcome to Everything is the Best, the podcast where I get vulnerable and make others do it with me. The goal here is to deep dive into interesting people's journeys, finding common denominators, and hopefully making you feel not so alone. So let's laugh, let's cry, and let's get inspired to live our best lives. Today's premiere episode is with none other than my husband, Davide. Growing up in a very small village in Sicily, Davide lived all over the world, starting out as a door-to-door salesman before eventually settling here in California and starting Ghiaia Cashmere. It's been a really difficult couple years, so I thought we would kind of deep dive into the details of some of the struggles that we've gone through together. And considering our current climate, I thought sharing stories about Italy and the challenges of being a small business owner was important. We also discussed what we're doing to remain calm in quarantine and the importance of a routine. Stay tuned to the end of the episode where we answer your relationship questions and see if it's one of yours. We start off all podcasts, all of our podcasts, with your high and low of the week. Can you briefly tell me what your high and low was this week?
I hope I'm not going to sound like, no offense to you, my wife, but actually the high of my week was, yesterday was my laundry day. It's my week. Weekly appointment with my laundry and going through my closet and reorganizing. I'm very meticulous about it. So
I understand.
This is one of my high. And I feel that it's pretty easy to find lows during a time like this. I've been through, you know, pretty much every time I'm on the phone with friends and family in Italy, I touch pretty low tones. Business is probably during the day dealing with making my brand running, still running. It's probably the lows of my week.
Your factory said that they were going to maybe open up next week, right?
So up to now, the government will allow them to open on April 13th. So a week from today, but
as per usual, or like only certain people, there must be limitations.
Limitation, I would say, in that specific case, it's a small little lab, it's a small factory. There are not those many employees. So even if it's a small, factory, a small operation, they will probably pay attention about distance.
Yeah, of course.
It's pretty sad. It's probably every time that I go through, I would say it's impossible to plan anything right now. That's probably the lowest.
How many generations has owned that?
So Italy, region by region, you really have different craftsmanship. I would say middle of Italy is really devoted to knitting in general.
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt what you're saying, but if you guys hear any insane noises in the background, it's...
I would actually like to place the microphone in front of his
mouth. I know, we have to do some ASMR. Our bulldog Chi-Chi is begging for his toy off the counter. It's okay, incredibly distracting.
Sorry, this is very unprofessional. I'm sure that it's not the right way to...
People
to
know that the dog is a part of us.
Should I just give him the toy and...
If you give him the toy, he'll play with the toy. He's going to make a lot of noise. Okay. If we bring the toy downstairs, he's not going to play with it. He wants to play with it for us. He's trying to perform.
You know what is very funny?
Go lay down.
I have a funny note on this.
What?
On podcast, once I watched this TED Talk about a guy that explained how to pretend to be smart. And it was based on the tones of the voice and the way you move your hands during a presentation. And I just realized the podcast
is the same thing.
You can talk about anything, but if you have the right tone, yes, the dog is asking for a toy. And you know what I mean?
So sorry, I'm really. We have Chichi Baroncini. Yeah, he is currently begging the for dog, his giraffe toy.
Really obsessed with the toy right now, which is a giraffe, a plastic giraffe.
He loves his giraffe.
Approved by the European Union. No, joking aside, we were talking about, the laws right now is hearing people struggling. I was about to say that Italy really goes region by region.
What they produce and what their craft
exactly,
is. Right?
Exactly. South up to Naples is very specialized in tailoring. Middle of Italy, people are specialized in knitting, which is a very specific skill.
Knitwear.
Yeah, knitting or knitwear for people listening to this podcast. If you are planning to start a brand, do not start with knitwear because that's the hardest thing you can actually do. And north of Italy.
What is north of Italy known for? I actually don't know that.
Small leather goods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So everything, accessories, shoes.
Like Ferragamo.
All the area of Veneto and yeah, they're pretty good at that.
So for those of you who do not know, my sweet husband had a wonderful job that he essentially kind of gave up. It's a deep story. We don't need to get into it.
You need a full all episode.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode. Oh. And moved here. And when he moved here and we got married, we didn't think it would take a year and a half to get his green card. And we also didn't know that during that time, he was only eligible for work unless he was hired by another Italian company. My husband, being a man of fucking loyalty and principle, like a badass, was like, I just spent the last 5 years working for an Italian company. How are people going to take me seriously if I just go working for another Italian company the next day? Yep. And so he started his own brand, Ghiaia Cashmere. For those who are confused about how it is pronounced, it's Ghiaia. And what is Ghiaia, Davide?
Ghiaia is a gravel. It's a Mediterranean gravel.
It's the stones that are on the beach. Because when you go to the beach in Italy, there's not sand.
On the Mediterranean side. We also have sand.
Where?
The beach, La Playa.
When your sister came here and we took her to the beach and she was covered impressed. In...
We don't like sand in general.
We brought Davide's sister to the most like exclusive part of Newport Beach, like snuck into this zone to be at the nicest beach. And she was like, what the fuck is this sand all over my body?
We like more. Yeah. We like more this little pebble, gravel stone, as a very natural color. And it's pretty, I like the texture. It's pretty smooth. And I grew up with Ghiaia under my feet. So I like the way it sounded, even if it's pretty hard for people to pronounce it.
Impossible to pronounce.
So in what we did, what I did.
one person.
In the bottom of the tag, I just...
You spelled it phonetically.
The way it will be pronounced. It. And your mother was around and I asked her, Mom, how do you read this? And she was like, Ghiaia. And I'm like, okay, Mom, if it works with you, people are going to get there.
For an average 70-year-old woman. So being an entrepreneur during this time, and I want you to answer this honestly because
I will.
There's a couple of things happening. One, obviously, any sort of investors that we had are now running to the hills to survive. But also, it seems like there are a lot of people understanding that this is a time where like the cream kind of rises to the top and it's almost like every man for himself / a lot of eyes are on small brands. And also, you had your best month this month.
I think that like you mention it, a situation like this, like every other, historically, like every other critical and dramatic situation, it kind of works as an equalizer. Mm-hmm. I feel that people are now paying more attention to what they are exposed all day long, which is the internet and social media. So they're really having the chance to take a minute and to understand what is out there and what is the proposal and what brand are doing and what brand stands for.
Who they actually like seeing.
And so I believe that for a small brand like mine, independent small brand, hopefully it will be a good time right after the virus. The problem is that it's really hard to project or plan what is going to be the after virus,
after
the pandemonium. It's how people are going to shop and what people are going to shop. And I think I always like, if I should think as a client, as a somebody that, I don't like the word consumer, but as a client, as a somebody, I like buying things that have a history. I like buying things that
last a long time.
Not only, but that have something. I like the history behind something.
Yeah, that are meaningful.
Correct. Sorry, I didn't have the word in
it's
my.
Okay, honey.
And I believe that the way I build my brand, Gaia, is
savagely meaningful.
We started with this. The first picture that we created, the first content we created with the first sample was a picture of my father. My father is 70. He was a mechanic for a good 50, a little bit over 50 years of his life.
Davide's father, Francesco, papa, he was a elevator. He fixed elevators.
Correct. And in Italy, if you are lucky enough, you get your father job. And after
didn't he like ask you to work there?
Totally. After I stopped, I was lucky enough to play professional sports for a couple of years.
Davide was a football player.
Yeah, we can call it soccer. I like American football. The plan was for me to get my father job. And I didn't see myself, with all due respect, doing that.
Actually, people should know your story. So when you stopped playing soccer.
Yeah, when I stopped playing soccer.
What did you do?
I had to finish school because the first year I signed my contract,
You were how old?
I was 17.
So you didn't go to school that year?
Basically. So I missed a year. I lost, how you say, I missed it.
Yeah, which is really normal in Italy.
I had to repeat that year of school. But
was that weird, by the way, with friends?
It was fantastic.
So it wasn't weird. Like it wasn't
glory.
Like, oh, you got held back.
Glory.
Because you were hot and older and you were just sleeping with all the people.
During the days on Wednesday, we had practice in the morning. And on Friday, we used to packed our stuff and to travel to go to play. So I remember going to school for an hour or two with my uniform and getting picked up. It's great for a young man playing sport, team sport especially. I never experienced individual sport. It really built part of my persona and my personality. Right after that, I had to finish school. In the afternoon, I started working as a door-by-door salesman. And the first thing
what
I sold... The first thing I was selling were
air conditioning,
a phone and internet provider. I was selling the package.
So can you, this is like a fucking fan, you're becoming like a fantasy right now.
Yeah.
So hot 18-year-old you would just walk around and knock on people's doors and say,
so I was 19 and when I stopped playing soccer this summer, I came back home and I remember my father telling me, I really don't care what you are gonna end up doing, but I need you to understand if you are fish or meat. Either way is fine to me, but you are a man now and I can't really support you. I couldn't go to college, I couldn't go to university. So I found this little job that was a part-time job.
How long did you do that for?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
You're my full husband. And 2 years you went door-to-door selling phone contracts. And then what did you do after that?
Phone contract, internet, and then I sold on the same dynamic. So door-by-door, or I would walk on the street. I had this little plastic stand. I would fill a form on Comune di Catania and the government page. that allowed me to be on the street, or I would work on mall. I used to have this navy sport coat. I had one. And I used to wear my best white shirt and my sport coat. And I used to fill my little Vespa with gasoline. And I would cruise around trying to make it happen.
Would you sometimes steal gas from other people's Vespas?
That's something that I should share with the, let's say that I was very parsimonious about gas. Yeah. So
I don't think any American has heard or fathomed this. I want
to sound super dramatic at this. Like,
I think it's, I think it's part of your charming story. So Davide and his brother used to take like a long tube and you would open up someone else's gas cartridge and you would suck gasoline quickly into the tube.
Being careful
and
not.
And hopefully stop before the gasoline hit your mouth.
When you do that,
when you suck,
for a pressure thing, gas come up. It's the same concept of basically like plunging. A pump.
Yeah.
and so the gas would have come out.
And then you would spit the gas.
That's embarrassing.
Back into your, it's not embarrassing.
Yeah, and also the older gas station.
By the way, most of the world grew up like this.
Yeah, the older gas station didn't have the system of the gas would stay on the pump. So if you were to jump on the pump,
no way,
the gas would have come.
No,
savage. And anyway, I really don't want to sound too dramatic, but I still get pretty emotional when I talk about it. It was
you got emotional about it when we started dating.
It was a good. Life master in life for sure.
So I'm only going to summarize this because it's easier for me, but Davide, the small things that he and his brothers would do that he now considers like savage, which are very normal in most parts of the world.
Yeah, it's
are the also the things that make his like heart explode with nostalgia for Italy. So every time we like sit down, my mom and I would be like, tell us a story about Italy. Remember when we were dating and we were long distance?
I also still have the red fuel.
The what?
When the car on the dash, I have the paranoia of being with no gas. That's why I give you always such a hard time.
Yeah,
not having gas in your car. I feel that when it comes to, often people talk about culture and about Italy and being Italian. Now, I don't want to go too far from your question, but I think that those kind of things are what make an Italian kid being an Italian kid. And I'm sure that in other part of the world there are, when I first moved to Brooklyn, I felt so comfortable walking around the block. So after that time, every time I got a new opportunity, a new job was on really maximizing all the opportunity I got. So one day I sold this guy a phone contract. I made a contract for his phone provider and internet. And he offered me a job. He was a light designer and agent for interior design and lighting.
Oh, and then that's how you got that job.
And that's how I got that job.
Wait, I want to pause on what you just said because I think it's important. The way that you grew up are nothing other than completely character building. What happens with immigrant families is they move to America, and this is, and I'm sharing this with our listeners because this is kind of our biggest concern for our children, is like, first of all, I'm so in love with you. And you are who you are because you grew up a certain way and you are charming and you're and you're adaptable. And you know how to make shit happen. And you've done lots of jobs with principle and with pride. Totally. And you also, you know, in Italy, you grow up when you're 12. You have your Vespa. You have your girlfriend. You grow up a little man there.
Yeah, and the level of responsibility. Also because you don't, 85% of people don't really grow up with a lot of money.
Money, yeah.
So financially, you got responsible for what you got. If you have a Vespa, you can't crash it. Then you're not going to have another one.
Yeah, no one's going
to. So you got to take care of it. So I remember literally having 10 euro in my pocket and saying, okay, now I got to prove my father that I can get a job on my own without ending up doing what he was doing. So I'm like, okay, what do I do with this 10 euro? Do I put gas? Do I buy a sandwich? do I buy a smaller sandwich and I put a little bit of gas? It's like, you really, like you just said, you
But going you back to what out. I was saying is like, we are now really concerned, not concerned, but we're like, it'll be very interesting. How do we implement that within our children, because now we live in a town that's, you know, listen, I'm a white privileged person. And, you know, my dad made middle class money. He came from a poor family. He worked at a grocery store his whole life. And then he got a football scholarship to USC. Yeah. And then my dad happened to be hyper intelligent and became a dentist and had a successful. So we all, you know, had private school education. Yeah. He was smart with his investments until all his money got stolen. And then he wasn't, which is why we live in this house, to make sure that we can keep his legacy going. And we don't have any money from him now, but you know, we're able to provide our children, hopefully, who knows after all this, but hopefully we're able to provide our children with a quote unquote, like, easier life. And so Davide and I constantly kind of go through this push and pull of like, how do we raise our children to essentially have those hardships?
Sorry if I cut you off, but I think that your father did a great job with you. You have a very strong work ethic. I don't want this episode turning in as no, giving compliment to each other, but I did have
my first job. My first job was in eighth grade when I could legally work.
So I think it's really about
just a work ethic.
Yeah, it's really about giving your kids the good values and good principles. The only thing I struggle with, and I would like to say that because I remember moving here and feeling, especially when I was younger, and my character wasn't built it. Yeah, I was going through that. I remember when I first moved to, when I first left Sicily and moved to Milan. So fast forward the job after phone contract and lighting, and I ended up installing AC. And I mean, I probably sold and did everything I could do. Selling to door by door really teach me how to change my profile based on my client.
I'm so happy you just said that, because what I've found from doing podcasts since the beginning is that the common denominator is having a fucking job in the service industry where you have to navigate.
Totally. I did that.
People.
I did that before soccer. I did that before signing my contract. I was working on a restaurant.
Nothing teaches you more about people.
My father never came to the restaurant because he didn't want to see me being serving at the tables. Stupid proud. What I was about to say, selling and doing it to random people. You know, a guy would might be asking me for a contract and he would be selling fruit on the street. Mm-hmm. And then the appointment after, would it be a doctor? Would it be an entrepreneur guy, like the one that offered me a job? It really teach you how to, you can't talk the same way, or
no, you cannot.
You know, you gotta be smart. You need to know how to adapt. Mm-hmm. How do I change gear? How do I make you feel comfortable? Mm-hmm. That's what selling is to me.
Or sometimes people don't want to hear you. Like sometimes you can get something out of someone with not saying. Like I remember being a waitress, and sometimes tables like didn't want me being cute and nice to them. They
totally
just wanted me to just bring them food.
Yeah, I think when you sell something on a you know, working on a restaurant, working on a bar, it's a fast process. Very mm-hmm. When you gotta sell somebody something and you sit it down and you have a pen and paper, it's a little bit more
slow.
It's the process, yeah. But anyway, when I moved to Milan, and when I left Milan, I moved to the States. I first spent some time in London. I spent some time in China. I moved to Amsterdam, and I moved to New York in 2013. And the first, long story short, the first time I had a working meeting with this big company, big job, like I was super excited. Everybody at this table will introduce themselves and mentioning the school they went to.
The college they went to?
The college they went to. So would it be like, my name is blah, 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 and I am blah, 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 and I went to Stanford. My name is blah, blah, blah. I do blah, blah, blah. And I went to Harvard. My name is blah, 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 whatever. And I was the last at the table. I'm like, hi, my name is Davide. Back then I was an account executive and I didn't go to college. And the people freeze at the table looking at me like I was a villain. I think what I really learned and what today I was reading this article about Forbes and the 30th richest men in Italy. And what it really catch my attention is that a good 80% of the list
grew up poor.
Yes.
Fuck yeah.
No education. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. I back to the kids and back to.
I mean, I didn't graduate.
I hope I would be able to give our kids.
They'll get it if they deserve
the best of education. I hope they are not gonna.
If they deserve
suck
it.
Nobody gas from the tank. I hope they would be able to. You know, first time I went, I remember a couple of years ago, your brother bring me to USC camp. To the campus.
Campus, yeah.
And I remember going through the campus for a couple of hours and he showed me a picture of your father, Coach Arobio. And I remember I was so impressed by the campus. It was beautiful. Like in Italy, you see only those kind of campuses in the movies, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember calling you and I remember thinking, damn, I wish I could go to college. And that's where I realized that if you really... Talking about values, if you, I met so many dumb people that went to great college. So if you do it right and you really give the right value to things, education is an incredible tool. I hope this country will, the public education system will get a little bit more efficient. The paradox is that in Italy, the people that go to private school are not that brilliant. That's why they go to private school.
No way.
Public school in Italy is very hard to, you don't have access easily. Mm. So there are like law school in Naples or economic school in Catania or medical school in Bologna are very hard to get into it. But the best students come from public education.
That's so funny. All right. So I want to divert from this conversation.
Yeah, sorry. We went totally far.
No, it's okay. Obviously, there's a lot of conversations right now about quarantine. So I want to quickly talk about what it's like to, like what we're doing to stay sane within this quarantine.
Yep.
And then I really want you to, or us, I guess we can talk about it. Like we kind of live like this. And I think that there's been emotionally for me, a lot of heaviness, beautiful heaviness about the fact that this has not been a big adjustment. And to be honest with you, that's made me very proud that we have a multi-generational household, that we're respectful of each other's routines and all of that. So can you briefly describe what your routine is? Because that's been a big question I've been getting asked.
I will first say, don't want to repeat myself. I always find pleasure in routine. When I first moved here to Pasadena, I was cruising around trying to find my spot, trying to find my barber, trying to find my tailor, trying to find my breakfast place.
Which we still haven't found.
I've been around. I didn't find my Italian version of croissant and coffee and chit-chat. But I tend to find the village everywhere I am. And that helped me. In quarantine, I work, my office is at home. So I feel that I spend a lot of time in this house. I would like to first say that we are extremely lucky. We definitely belongs to the lucky people during this dramatic time. Feel very blessed to be able to even have an office home. In the house.
Yeah,
home. And this is a beautiful.
So this is the house. We live in the house that I grew up in. My parents bought this place in the 80s. Five of us were raised here. They don't own it. My mother doesn't outright own it yet. So when my father died, we moved in because this is such a essential part of like our family structure is to have this space. Thanksgiving is here. Christmas is here. It's a major gathering place. So we decided
Big
that
kitchen.
We would take over the mortgage indefinitely until we figure out what we're going to do. I didn't want my father to die and move my mom into an apartment and sell this house. So this is the, for anyone who is always like, oh, you live in a big house. We do live in a beautiful big house, but it's definitely a false sense of affluence because we did not buy this house, nor can we afford to. But
yeah, that's I was about to say that when I say that we are lucky. I tend, even before quarantine, I always try to give my day the right tempo. I try to give my day the right pace.
So describe like quickly what that pace is.
First thing I do in the morning, when I say the very first thing, is making a coffee for myself.
Like one eye open, he gets out of bed and makes espresso. The espresso machine's in our bedroom. It was $50 on Amazon.
Exactly. So the first sound in there is like, oh. And I love to use that action as button of power on.
And your start button.
My switch. And I usually make the coffee and I go back to bed. I like to have those 10, 15 minutes reading the news and going through my email to see what the day is going to look like. What I try to do to keep it, to keep myself functional, I dress myself. I mean, I...
Yeah, so Davide, like, totally even if... And it's so... It's very ironic because I work half from home and half from my office with Revolve. And I go to Revolve looking less dignified than you do to work from home. Davide gets fully dressed up to go work in his office.
It really gives me a sense for, I think everybody, that anybody that worked for a big company at a certain point can understand that. I like to just, it's more
dignified. Feel dignified.
Absolutely. Take a shower, pick my outfit, pick my watch, I pick my glasses. And that's how I start my day. I like to have a coffee break at 10:30.
Lunch at 12.
I like to have a lunch at 12.
You
I like
keep
it
a
to,
very you keep,
like
the,
it to make
you keep
my lunch.
An Italian schedule.
I try to leave the biggest thing I miss about Italy is probably the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that pace. Not that Italians are lazy or nothing, but we do like to breakfast.
Take a moment
breakfast
to breathe.
Has to be breakfast.
Yes.
Coffee break is a coffee break. A lunch, I got to sit it down. I got to have a cloth. I got to have a plate, a glass. I got to have my lunch that way. I got to have my coffee after lunch. And I go back to work. What I tend to do, first thing in the morning, I write down what is my to-do list, usually. But writing down, it really helped me to process what my day is going to look like. And I tend to do important thing in the first part of the morning.
Same.
When I am sharp, if I gotta make any decision or I need to creatively work on something, I like it to do in the first time of the morning. I sharp, I'm fresh, I feel good. Put some music on and really kick in. And in the afternoon, I usually do annoying things most of the time. And
shipping things, and
shipping, accounting, bills. UPS.
And then you and I are both really good about, like, at 6 o'clock, we stop working.
Correct.
And I'll never not do that. And I have to say, you know, you and I have both lived lives where we've worked schedules that were not healthy and not normal. Definitely. And watching you have boundaries with what you need to be, you know, you're a highly creative person and you're doing a highly creative job. As am I, but it's been really, you know, you've influenced me so much to be more thoughtful about, like, how my day works, making my list in the morning, which I've always done, but doing my most important things in the morning, taking a time to have a coffee for a second, sitting down to have lunch. Like, you need those breaks.
I'm definitely not a multitasking person.
I mean, I am, obviously. I'm like a fucking...
I'm not. I don't miss New York for that reason. I remember having a very crowd schedule, 15 hours a day.
Traveling, 6 days a week, if you were lucky.
6 days a week, flying out every 2 days. I had a great job, learned a lot, but it was a tough schedule. After six, aperitivo time, I really like to go through leisure things.
Have
I love
a snack, have a cocktail.
Yeah, I love to have a cocktail with my wife, with my mother-in-law. We have this, I think it's also the lightest time of the day, you know, the day went over. We all make cocktail for ourselves. We started prep for dinner. It's the house feels good. I think without being dramatic again, your father is also around the house. The house has a beautiful energy.
So before we move on to our answering our relationship questions, I want to sum up what you just said with, like, a nice sentiment, which is that, first of all, I'm so lucky to have a husband who was willing to move in with his mother-in-law. That's extremely rare. And moving into quarantine and us feeling like this hasn't been a big adjustment has nothing to do with... Yeah, we're lucky to be in Los Angeles. And regardless, we've had, like, this transition of us living together has been at times, a complete fucking nightmare. Imagine being newly married, your father dropping dead in front of your husband and moving in with your mom. Like having sex, like in, having date nights, walking around. Like there were so many times where my husband and I would look at each other and be like, yeah, we would much rather be in our 500 square foot apartment in Venice or our room in Brooklyn. Like the exchange of space in this house isn't worth it. It's not worth being able to be fucking comfortable. And so we put in that work and now we feel very blessed to come out on the other end of this in that this hasn't been a big adjustment. And I do feel like I'm getting emotional about this, but you know, when my dad died, I remember saying at his funeral, like, I don't have regrets about him dying because I actively practiced my love for him. So if you do have the chance to spend time with members of your family who spark joy for you, I don't think that every family member needs to be honored if you're related to somebody who doesn't serve you well. But, you know, really taking this time to be very appreciative of the fact that you have a family and that you can spend time with them. I feel very guilty about it because you're far away from yours. But
I think we both grew up with
good sense of family.
Yeah, that we grew up with the sense of
even if doing your family was fucked up. Yeah,
doing the right thing.
Yeah,
all the time. You know.
Are you ready to answer some relationship questions?
So this is the funny part. The funny part is coming.
Okay. I'm not saying names, I'm saying initials. This is from LS.
LS.
I wanted to see your take on language barriers in relationships. I am always hesitant to date outside of my culture with the thought in mind that there could be a major miscommunication barriers and roadblocks. Additionally, how is it when you are with Davide's family and have a language block there? I have fears of bringing my significant other on a trip and having them be on mute essentially since they can't communicate with my family or me not being able to enjoy the conversation.
You want me to answer? I mean, I guess language barriers. I will say that the hardest part, first of all, I learned English recently, as you can hear.
Your English is brilliant for only learning it 4 years ago. Assuming.
I found myself struggling with the meaning, not necessarily the vocal, not the language, not what I was expressing in words, but I always find very hard to translate my thoughts in action. How do I make you understand that I'm acting this way in front of this situation because of who I am and because where I come from? One of the biggest mistakes I think that people makes about language is that I heard a lot of people here saying, I'm Italian. I fluently speak Italian. Speaking a language is not necessarily carrying the cultural aspect of a place. I feel that in our relation specifically, especially at the beginning, before Pia came visiting my family in Sicily and saw where I grew up and my room, my school, and what was around me.
It was a huge adjustment because I was walking around Sicily like I was on vacation, and there are very clear social rules there that
totally
you have to abide by.
And I think it was very hard for me to translate that. I don't know if I'm clear on
you're
the answer
clear
I give, that, but it wasn't necessarily the struggle. Yeah, of course. I often would like to yell at my wife in Italian. and I would like to have the genuine reaction on my own language. At this point, she also understands those bad words. So sometimes the hardest part is to really translate my behavior,
culture,
translate my why am I acting like this? Why my reaction is different compared to yours?
Because you just grew up so differently.
Correct.
And I'll answer it on the other end of what is it like when you bring someone somewhere who doesn't understand the language. Every time we go to fucking Sicily, I don't know anything anybody's saying. And there are times where I am sitting in a room and just kind of like looking at my phone a little bit, but there isn't a moment where I feel uncomfortable because love and warmth and, you know, all the things that don't need words go out the door.
Exactly. I think that every time
your mom and I communicated with her, she would say something in Italian. I would have no clue what the hell she said, but I knew what she was saying, and I would respond in English. And Davide was the translator. Who's the only person who loses in this situation is the person who's translating. Because I will see that Davide's brain gets really fried.
I think that every time you are in front of a limitation or in front of a limit, you, necessità virtù, we say in Italy, you develop other components. So when we were struggling about speaking the same language, we really developed more, we got more connected. So now we do understand each other looking in the eyes rather than talking.
All right. Second question.
Go ahead.
This is from JL.
JL.
Dear Pia and Davide, my roommate and I are both 26 and stuck in the same fucking dead existential crisis dumpster fire shit show of a dating landscape. In other words, we live in New York City. What are your tips and words of guidance for dating in New York in your mid to late 20s and finding your person, the one? This is a very open-ended question. We just want to hear your thoughts on finding love in New York City post-corona, obviously. Thank you. Grazie. We love you. Stay healthy. It's two girls who are roommates.
I will first say enjoy it because 26 in New York sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, Davide and I both spent our prime in New York.
Totally.
I did 9 years. He did five. Have sex with anyone you want to.
And talking about language barrage, having an accent in New York is...
Yeah, Davide was cleaning
pretty good. I would say the only big advice... Whenever you're looking too hard for something, for some reason, it never comes.
It doesn't come.
I would say you're 26. Put every day the best yourself, the best version of yourself on.
And just live an adventure.
And enjoy it. Living around and...
The moment that you don't think you're searching for something, it'll come. Also, don't be annoying.
Also, careful about what you wish. Yeah.
Davide and I were like in our prime, not looking for anything. I mean, I was setting an intention to find my husband, but it came a lot sooner than I had expected. And now we are living with my mom and are far away from where we were. What, literally 2.5 years ago when we kind of had like an open relationship and could do whatever we want. So what I will say is being a single woman in New York is...
Enjoy it, for sure.
At some point soon, you're going to meet someone and then the rest of your life, God bless you, hopefully, is with just that person.
I think also, without sounding like a super, without giving anybody a lesson or moral here, I think in the next 5 years of your life, I mean, between 25 and 30, I would have never expect all the change I went through it.
So much change.
So many things are going to face. You're going to face so many opportunities.
It's like first you want a boyfriend and then you want a fiance and then you want a husband and then you want a baby. And then it's like, where does it end?
I mean,
just cruise, man.
Manhattan is the place in the world with the most beautiful people.
Enjoy.
In every corner. I remember going through neighborhood and having... so much variety of minds.
You walk to your bodega and there's a beautiful person.
I remember the guy walking, selling cheese in my neighbor was like
so
coming out of a magazine, long hair and shoulder and a beard. I'm like, okay, I can see why you do this.
Yeah.
Just enjoy it.
I would say use New York City kind of like as we did. It's like trying food. Try everything. You don't know what you like and don't like until you've tried a little bit of everything. And
sorry
if this is like slutty advice, and I'm not saying go sleep with everyone, but go on dates and be chill. Don't rush when someone texts you.
I spit sushi on my dish the first time I try it, and now I like it to eat it twice a week.
Exactly.
So
spit sushi out.
So it might take a minute, but see the glass half full.
And on to our... relationship Q&A. Here is our first question. I'm just going to not name names, but I'm going to give initials here. This is from DR.
DR.
DR says, hi, Pia and Davide. I really look up to the two of you. Can't wait until I can get my shit together like you guys. My question is about this quarantine and being locked up inside a toxic partner. My boyfriend and I have been together for 2 years, living together about a year and a half. Our relationship is turning really ugly. My boyfriend sleeps until 5 p.m., then does nothing but play video games until he passes out again. Absolutely nothing I say is enough for him to take any responsibility. Our fights have turned really ugly. But the hardest part of all of this is that he's here on a visa. He lost all forms of ID and has no family here. Breaking up is not a simple split now. I would be making him homeless. I deeply care about him and have planned to marry him. But lately, he has no ambition at all or motivation whatsoever. It's hard to do everything, and I have all the responsible, stressful things of life falling on my shoulders. My question to you is, have you ever been in a relationship like this? Maybe I could have Davide's opinion on how to make my partner be a real partner. What's your advice on getting me my own routine so I don't worry about what he is doing so much? Thank you for taking some time to read this. Sending love to you. Oh my God, that makes me so emotional.
I would like to say one thing that might sound pretty obvious. It takes two people to dance. So I feel that you are really putting all yourself in this, sharing with us your feeling in this question. I feel that the biggest advice I can give it to you is that in order to plan something with somebody, you need to do it with that person. And there is not that much you can do more than what you're doing. I think he needs to do for himself. And I really believe that when the rope is tight is when everything, you know, get more clear.
Shows.
And in this kind of circumstances, when you started to really know a person. So I say, and I don't want to give you the wrong advice. Of course, it's very, very kind of you to be concerned about him not having a visa and about not messing it up or making him a homeless, but
this is your life.
It is.
And this is the rest of your life.
You need to make him understand that sometimes we realize how important things are when we lose them. So if I can give you a strategic advice, make him waking up a little bit earlier than 5 p.m. Do your things. Get busy. I feel you have that sense in you. He has to find that motivation in himself. Otherwise, I don't know how hard you can hold for both of you.
I'm a huge believer in that people do actually change. He could be severely depressed right now, and having that conversation before anything else, like asking him politely, not in a judgmental way, like, hey, like, I've noticed you've been waking up at 5 p.m. Like, so are you depressed? Like, is there anything I can do to help you?
Partnering.
Approaching him as a partner. And so letting him kind of feel, okay, clearly you're not totally thinking it's normal for him to wake up at 5 p.m. But if you do it in a way that, you know, pisses him off, people are just going to be defensive. But I will say this on top of that. Listen, you said you're in a toxic relationship. If that's the only thing that's toxic, do everything you can in your power to change that, because you don't want to leave a relationship with regrets.
As a man, I would say I always felt a red light when I feel that my partner is not attracted by me no more. Mm-hmm. Not only in a physical way, I'm talking on a mental way. If I feel that my partner doesn't respect me, and if I feel that even not necessarily vocally, if I feel that the person next to me is not attracted by who I am and how I live and what I stand for, I usually react to that. So what I was trying to say, of course you can partnering and you can supporting him through this hard time, but I think it has to come from him, the spark of saying, okay, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
I am losing somebody. I do care about it. You also got to figure out, I don't want to sound like an asshole, you got to figure out if
this
he
is your
care
guy.
About you,
yeah,
if you care
if
about
your guy
a visa.
Your visa.
You know?
Because listen, if you don't feel that,
there are a thousand ways you can help him without making him homeless.
When Davide and I were dating, you could also help him without making him homeless. When Davide and I were dating, I would look for these signs as to whether or not he thought I was his person or some girl he was fucking. I mean, who knows? The one thing that everyone would ask is like, how did you know? I mean, I woke up every day and looked every day that we could spend together, and I would look at him sleeping, and my guts, my bones said, this is the person I'm supposed to marry and have children with.
There are things you do feel.
It wasn't a choice. It would have been easier to to walk away and find someone who fucking lives in this town.
Listen, things happen in life also. Nobody planned that after 2 years of being boyfriend and girlfriend, we would go through a quarantine pandemonium.
No, but yeah, of course,
because sure, that's guts,
something that, you know, is unexpected in a relationship. But if you don't feel that in your guts,
gotta go.
Fuck this guy.
I agree.
Honestly. And we'll help you. DM me. We'll help get you out of there. I mean, that's not a good way to spend your quarantine, is being this depressed. And so we are sending you love, and we're totally here in any other capacity for help. But our immediate advice is, yeah, do what you can to see if he needs any sort of help, see if he changes. And if he doesn't, like, you got to get out of that relationship and he will be fine. And that's not your responsibility to live the rest of your life a certain way because of some fucking guy. Okay, moving on. Hi, guys. This is from LFF. Here's my relationship question. How do you confront a partner about changing their unhealthy diet or eating habits?
What is the next question?
Or how do you just come to terms with eating separate meals? Background. My boyfriend comes from a single parent upbringing due to his father's unexpected death. And this resulted in pretty poor eating habits throughout his childhood. Absolutely no judgment. I love him. I can't imagine what his mom dealt with having to be a single mother. And I know that at the end of the day, everyone is really just trying to do their best. But this disordered eating has bled into his adult life, and it's really become scary, in turn, unattractive, since we're living together. It's really difficult to watch him binge on a bunch of junk, and we're at the point where we're confronting this subject, and it needs to kind of get figured out. And she also says they're arguing about it.
Like I said before, I believe that whenever, as a man, you feel that your partner is going to walk away from you, either because you are not taking care of yourself or taking care of your partner, I think that you can do your best to make him. I grew up thinking that food is part of your manners, you know, like it's part of how you live your life and about who you are. When I see people ordering at a restaurant, I can kind of understand what kind of personality is out there. So like you just said, of course, no judgment here. And has his good reason to have this bad behavior. But I think that in order to him being the best partner for you and taking care of you, he has to take care of himself. So I would try to be as firm as possible and making him understand that.
Well, if those are also the habits that you don't want for your children, and this is someone you want to marry, this is like a conversation that really needs to turn into a boundary situation.
Correct. It's something that you will share with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we are what we eat.
I don't want to be... So I have had weight issues my whole life. I remember one time... Do you remember that time you found me binging in the kitchen and I spilled the salsa all over the place? Yeah. And you like walked in and you were like, honey, were you binging alone? And I was like, yeah. And you were like, it's okay. Like, I'll help you clean up. Because I've had, you know, so much eating stuff my whole life. So I understand it. But I also, I'm going to tell you this, and sorry because Davide hates this, I have dated someone who would gorge constantly, just food that did not serve their body. And it can be gross. And my mom actually felt that way about my dad. My dad at the end of his life was so depressed with his body not working that my dad was like shoveling.
I do believe in organic way to approach things. So if you feel that this is starting being an issue, just face it. Face it. Share with them. Say, honey.
And approach him in a way of like, are you okay?
That way. Correct. Because maybe he's...
Seems like you're eating a lot.
He's frustrated or, you know, nervous. When I'm nervous, I tend to snack a lot. When I go through stressful time, I eat snacks. It's crazy. I lose weight, but I nervously eat things. So I would say taste the pulse a little bit. try to understand what the reason is. And
if it's a habit that he grew up with, you know, maybe say, hey, listen, you know, I
maybe start a cooking for him.
Start. There you go.
I think
start that, cooking all of his meals.
I think that that's a really good way to arrive to the heart of a man.
Absolutely, Davide. That's a really good suggestion.
I remember Pia started getting upset about me when I started cooking for her.
Well, this is actually, great. You know? Davide only ever made pasta or dishes that we were dating long distance. I'd go to New York and I would eat all this food and I would leave New York like, wow, I just gained a lot of weight. I totally went off my routine and I was really nervous to cook for you because I didn't want you to not like it. So I wouldn't tell him what I was making so he couldn't have an opinion about it. And then when he would eat it, he would love the cooking. He would be so stoked.
It's not only about what you eat, but I think there is something, there is a romantic component about sitting down and eating together, preparing a meal together, putting some music on. He probably never experienced that, as she mentioned.
Yeah, because if he had a single mom who was working, she was probably doing what she could. Start guiding him.
Yeah, he's a woman on the kitchen.
If this is someone you want to marry, think about increments of 5 years. Within those 5 years, think about the changes that are going to happen. So
totally.
You don't need to say, oh man, this is like, if you're arguing, you got to fix this thing. But, you know, give it a little bit of time and patience. And if you get to the point where you're really concerned for his health and the health of your children, you have to let him know that you're pretty serious about
that. Try to guide him. I agree with my wife. Try to guide him through pleasant experience. Pleasant food experience. Put some music on. Put something sexy on. Thing. And, have a good meal. Have a nice coffee after. And love each other. I think is...
On that note, we should end on that note because that was a beautiful way to end.
Think about it. Food, I think, is one of the biggest pleasure that we do have in this life. So make him share that with him.
Thank you, Davide.
I like when you wear your glasses.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. We'll see you again soon. We'll see you guys next week. Ciao. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes this week's episode of Everything is the Best. I hope you enjoyed it. Please rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Maybe leave a comment. But remember, shitty comments are for shitty people. Go ahead and follow me on Instagram at Pia Barangini, and I hope you have a fabulous, fabulous rest of your day. Love you. Ciao.